Lights. Camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond with the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Facebook page. And, of course, recording of episode number 186. Very timely one here at, of course, Quinlan's Cantina as, of course, season 5 of the one, the only Cobra Kai. Without a doubt, one of the greatest series ever to come up when it comes to television. And, of course, this new streaming format that's just everywhere. And I thought it timely to go through the trilogy of films. Yes, I'm talking about the trilogy, folks, because at the end of the day, the fourth film, I don't know. Well, I haven't seen it much, but I'll say this. I'll have to check it out, and we'll probably review it at a later stage. But, yes, the Karate Kid trilogy, of course, is one of the reasons I'm doing martial arts and teaching it to this day as well. It's something that really got me involved in that sort of world. And to this day, I'm thankful for the stories that were presented. And, of course, at the end of the day, what it represents was, of course, you know, a time in the 80s with music, fashion, definitely VHS, you know, was huge at this time as well when it came out. In 1980s, you know, 84, 85, through to 87, VHS was just going nuts with Karate Kid in particular here in Australia when I was growing up. So, of course, the movies in question are these ones right here, Karate Kid 1, 2, and 3, which are in this nice new set, which are available on, of course, HD, Blu-ray. And they've got a mountain of features, which we're going to talk about soon. We'll review roughly, well, of course, we know, most of us know what the story's about already. If you're a Cobra Kai you know, viewer, you'll know as a fan of the show what that's about. And, of course, the journey of Daniel LaRusso and, of course, Johnny Lawrence, both Miyagi-Do and, of course, Cobra Kai have been all about. We're going to talk about a little bit about that tonight. But the majority of this is going to be looking at these older films and, you know, what really is a series of films to me, as strong as Star Wars, Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, all those classics, even the Rocky series, which, of course, the director of these was the director of Rocky. So there's something about these fight films and training and montages and music and classic stuff, which we're going to get to tonight. Now, if you like this show and, of course, many others like it, you can find it on, of course, a little ticker down here, which starts right about here. And, of course, it says, go and check us out at lethalmullernetwork.podbean.com, which will have this show and, of course, our back catalog of fantastic shows covering everything when it comes to, of course, action, cinema, and much more. You'll also catch on that too, Making Tricks of Star Trek Fan Podcast with myself and, of course, my good pal from the UK, from Brummy, from Birmingham, the one, the only, Mark Newbold, of course. He is also part of the Fantha Tracks Network, which I am as well, which is a very well-known and, of course, amazing site for Star Wars. So if you like Star Wars content, go and check out Star Wars News in a single file of Fantha Tracks. And, of course, you can check me, the Fantha from Down Under, over there. That's right. I do a little bit of Star Wars there. But the team over there is huge, and they do a fantastic job of talking about everything from the movies to the merchandise, the books, you name it, it's there. So why not go and check it out and tell them the mullet sent you. Also, of course, on this network, we have, of course, a really good show, which is I'm just about to drop the video of, which, of course, will have a podcast attached to it, Deep Thought, and, of course, Pod, which is, of course, a look at Douglas Adams and, of course, the Universe of the Hitchhiker's Guide. And we've got Dan Hadley has joined us in the last week to get another episode out. And Anything But Infinite is the title of that episode. We're going to be looking at a little bit more into the back end of the first book and leading up to, of course, a restaurant at the end of the universe. So don't panic. That's coming. That'll be episode number 4. And it's probably one of the more interesting parts. We talk about also our favorite characters and, of course, where everything leads at the end of that first story. So lots coming there too. We've got some stuff with Kyle Wagner of FPN coming up very soon. And of course, Lee Fillingsness will be joining us soon to chat about. I've got to get this off the table. But, of course, we've talked about it a bit. Heat 2, that's right. Heat number 2, sequel, which no doubt Michael Mann will turn into some type of TV project. I mean, I'm thinking a streaming series of this would be good. I mean, it's a fairly thick one, folks. But as you can see, it's both in 1988 and 2000. And a lot of it's to do with Chris, the character played by Val Kilmer in it as well, Vincent Hanna, and of course, Neil McCauley's in it in parts as well. And very interesting. Of course, it's kind of like Godfather 2, where we have both a prequel element before the film, and we also have an element after as well, which is really interesting. So I like that they sort of bring both about. That's on the way, folks, as well. We're also going to have a review. So a lot of these books coming through soon. I'm a big book reader. Of course, as Kyle and Dan have told you, Eaters of the Dead by Michael Crichton. Of course, the basis of the amazing 13th Warrior. Crichton's book, of course, deals with Ahmad ibn Fadlan's account, of course, of the Rus, which were basically Vikings at the time. And, of course, it really shows the customs and everything that the Vikings were all about. And, of course, mixed with Beowulf. So we check that out too. If you are a reader of the UK magazine, of course, Empire, there's a great new one there too with information about the Rings of Power. They've also got in that one too some stuff about, of course, Middle Earth, Brad Pitt, Avatar 2. And did I just read that right? They're also doing Avatar 4. James Cameron, where in the good earth is my True Lies Blu-ray? Special edition, mate. And The Abyss. Get that director's cut happening, mate. Tell you what, you love your water. Well, we do too. We also love to see the terror down there. And of course, that is The Abyss. But also you got in that too, the acknowledgement, the Face-Off 2 is happening with, you guessed it, part of the cast of the first ones, folks. Nicolas Cage is back as Castor Troy. That's right. He's going to take his face off. When I saw that, I'm like, come on. I mean, what is it? What is it about it? Now, we've got the comment section open, particularly on the Facebook feed. So if you do want to comment on The Karate Kid, I'm sure all of you know the universe well. You've got something to say about the series, the martial arts involved in it, the characters, the actors, maybe Cobra Kai. Well, let us know. You know, what is your favorite moment in The Karate Kid series? All right, we're predominantly talking about that tonight. I mean, it's a very successful series, particularly the first two films. The third film gets a bit of a bad rap, but I do like it. It's kind of like, to me, like The Dark Knight Rises, you know. It's hard to top those first two films. It's a good film in itself, but it's still not the same. And if you do get to that point where you want to caffeinate, folks, you know you can get yourself a Lethal Mullet. Oh, look at that. It's even got their logo on it too. Coffee mug. And, of course, this is loaded up with a nice iced latte, so I don't mind if I do. Indeed. Okay, so that's what we're going to be doing tonight, folks. But let's just have a think about what we are doing when it comes to sequels. If we've got something like Face Off 2, yeah, it's a little bit like when we look at The Matrix, you know, having this fourth Matrix film, which did we really need another Matrix? Well, I mean, I liked it for what it was. But it's hard because sometimes you tarnish something that's come before. Well, those last two Matrix sequels beforehand were exactly lighting the sky on fire. You know, they are what they are, and I appreciate it for what they are. But it certainly was not as good as Path of Neo, which is a far better sequel in that sense too. So Face Off 2, I've looked at the article and I've looked at a little bit of information on it, but without delving into that or spoiling that or getting an idea, you know, we've got obviously interest of, you know, Nicolas Cage is kind of in his element right now. You know, a lot of people are interested in seeing where he's going to go with what he's doing and stuff like that. That's fantastic. I like it. But I look at Face Off was a great film. You know, and again, very much John Woo. You know, it's John Woo film, so you know what you're getting with John Woo. Double guns, shoot 'em up fantasy. Is it going to be as strong as the same thing? Probably not. We're not in that sort of realm these days. Even though, you know, the gun-fu is still out there, you know. You look at his killer or hard-boiled, And a couple of films, which actually a couple of listeners have asked about us looking at, if I can find a good copy of those and review again. I haven't seen since VHS, folks. So I need to really get a feel for those films again. John Woo's one of my favorites. I mean, Redcliffe. you don't get better than that. That's, you know, that's as exciting for me as watching The Spartans in that Zack Snyder film, 300. Same thing. 300 is just amazing. It's a marvel of photography. But, you know, yeah, his American films, like Hard Target, amazing. I mean, we got Hard Target 2 with Scott Atkins, which is all right. But that was really one that Van Damme should have done a sequel to. I mean, why wouldn't you? Chance Boudreau, you know? His mama took a chance. Maybe he should take one and make a sequel. There you go. There's your chance. Chance Boudreau. You know, you got that. You've also got some other great ones that he did as well. But Nicolas Cage, going to do sequels, Nicolas Cage. How about Con Air 2? Now, I don't know if that's ever been talked about, but it really is, you know, a film that I think character-wise could really work. You know, there was so much going on in that film. I mean, characters you could bring back too. It's not just the same characters over and over. But if you look at as far as what he's done in the past and beforehand, I mean, why wouldn't you give that guy a chance and, of course, do that again? I mean, it's just bang on perfect. All right, so, folks, we're talking about the 1984 film, which started it all, The Karate Kid. And it's in a franchise which, you know, is very much obviously labeled as a martial arts series. Yes, there's martial arts involved, but it's more a drama film. And, you know, it's a martial arts drama, if you like, starring Ralph Macchio, William Zabka, which is Pat Morita, and, of course, a host of amazing other talent. And his story is, as much as it is about, of course, the likes of course, Daniel LaRusso moving from one part of the United States to another and having to start over pretty much. And part of that, the trials and tribulations of being a teenager in high school and, of course, being bullied, which is a key part of the film. It's directed by John G. Avildsen, obviously director, of course, of Rocky. I mean, what better film? Rocky's one of my favorite films in the world. 1976, I mean, that really put not only himself on the mark, you know, as one of the greats when it comes to directing, but also, of course, Sylvester Stallone as a star as well. Now, the thing about this, too, that really makes it interesting, I think, is, you know, we've got a writer in this and written by the film itself by Robert Mark Kamen, who is a martial artist and uses some of his experiences as a martial artist and what that entails, the universe of being a martial artist, being in the dojos, having, you know, that that camaraderie with students, senseis, whatever it be, senpais, whatever, and really sort of focusing on what it is and the positivity that comes out of being a martial artist. The good skills, the bad skills, all that sort of thing comes to the fore in this, and it's done quite well. You know, there's a lot of good teachers out there. There's also a lot of bad teachers, and this is what this brings out. It's also a fight film with a tournament format in this as well, which is interesting too, which we'll get into. Now, Columbia Pictures put this out, and obviously they saw the previous success of Rocky. Now, that's why they basically looked to Avildsen to direct this film. What's interesting, though, is that, you know, it is as much as it is not a boxing film, I think it is more akin to Rocky in the fact that Rocky is also a character piece. You know, every single character has time to grow, has a hero's journey as well, which is really interesting. You don't get that in a lot of these films. Rocky had it really well. You know Rocky, you know, he's obviously his wife in it, Adrian. You also know, obviously, the characters around it, Mickey, who's training them and stuff like that too, Paulie. And in this, we get the same. We get to meet, of course, Daniel, his mother, who's fantastic in this as well. Obviously, too, we got Elizabeth Shue coming in here too as a love interest, but also a character to herself, you know, really pushes all the characters around a bit, even gives Johnny Lawrence a run for his money as well. Each one's given enough of a journey that makes it interesting. You don't get that in a lot of the films today because everything's fast editing. You need to have explosions and, you know, everything's Marvel or DC or Fox, you know, when it comes to Star Wars and Disney Plus and all that sort of stuff. So to see this sort of thing and the right pacing, it is a well-paced film as well too. I think one of the interesting things is, again, they've got a comedic actor to play such a serious role, because it is, in the role, of course, of the one and only, of course, Mr. Miyagi. And, of course, played by Noriyuki Pat Morita. And, of course, Pat Morita was known as, of course, a stand-up comic, being an actor. He's been Happy Days and a number of other things too. And he's really, in that series, somebody's able to turn on character, as I said, in a lot of the documentaries, straight away and just lock into this amazing character that he created. And, of course, you can see it on the screen, how it influences, obviously, Macchio's character of Daniel LaRusso. It really gives it something completely, you know, different. And I think that's what makes it really interesting as, you know, as it goes along too. What's interesting too is the rivalry between Johnny Lawrence and Daniel LaRusso in this first film. And obviously it sets up what we see later on as they get to meet each other later in life in their late 40s, early 50s. And of course, one of the great things about that too is the way that Zabka and Macchio play those characters. And of course, the inclusion of Elizabeth Shue pretty much in the middle there, you know, fending off the flames of an ex-boyfriend while obviously seeing a new guy when it comes to Macchio too, as she plays Ellie Mills. So that's pretty much the brunt of what I, you know, straight away feel about that film. But also the inclusion of what karate does, not only in terms of, you know, physical attributes, but what it does for the spirit as well. We see somebody that's filled with fear, you know, and doesn't have that self-confidence at the start of it. You know, he's obviously going up against more than five or six people when the Cobra Kai guys go against him. So it's interesting to see in this that we see, you know, LaRusso not only get the abilities and, of course, the, you know, the technique of karate, he gets the spirit of karate that Cobra Kai never get. They have that aggressiveness thanks to, of course, Martin Cove's amazing depiction, of course, of the one and the only John Kreese. So let's talk about story. So the basic story of the first film is set in 1984, and Daniel LaRusso and his mother, Lucille, coming from Newark, New Jersey, all the way to, of course, Reseda, Los Angeles, California. You know, to us Aussies out here, you know, it's going from literally one side of country to the other. So you can imagine going from Perth to the Gold Coast. Kind of that, maybe a little bit longer trip. But, I mean, it's a hell of a trip for somebody to take all the way through there too. From here, they go to this apartments area there where they meet a handyman who fixes their plumbing and stuff like that by the name, of course, Miyagi, with any, of course, of Okinawan descent. Well, the great thing is how that slowly comes into being is the actual knowledge that this gentleman really knows karate and knows it well. And what I love about this too is that, you know, it's the little inklings, especially when we see Daniel in his room, you know, in the apartment, learning karate from a book, which we all did in the 80s. There wasn't dojos everywhere. Before I started training in Shotokan in Brisbane, in Australia, I used to go to local libraries, the council libraries, and pick up books on martial arts and learn from the books, just like you see in that. But, of course, it's pales in comparison to being in a dojo, which Miyagi's kind of alluding to, which is interesting. So from this, we get to see, of course, a budding friendship come up, and it's over bonsai trees, something I myself have tried to do before, and bonsai is not easy, not by a long shot. It's a real art to itself, just a little like martial arts, I guess, folks. Through that, of course, they start to also together experience Cobra Kai. And, of course, first it's Daniel's problem, but then Daniel gets to a point where he can't handle it any further because, again, it's 5-on-1 in that gang taking on, of course, headed by Johnny Lawrence and, of course, the rest of the team, which we'll talk about when we get to the cast. What's interesting, though, is as they get closer to his home in Reseda there, after a prom night where they've got all, of course, Halloween or whatever it is with all the outfits on, gets chased to a fence line, beaten up, and then, of course, Miyagi comes to the rescue. And it's really eerie. It's a great scene because it's almost like we get to see everything in a slow speed with smoke. And it feels like smoke and mirrors, but it's not. Of course, the person doing the choreography on this is legendary karate and kata exponent Fumio Demura. And Demura's books on karate, Okinawan weapons, and, of course, kata are legendary from the 1980s and on. Of course, he was also, I believe, the stunt double for Miyagi and a lot of those fight scenes and stuff like that too. what's great about it is we get to see how karate works in terms of multiple opponents and stuff like that too. It's a bit fanciful in some spots, but at the same time, this is, again, a film. So you're seeing it for what it is too. From here, Miyagi agrees to train the boy and, of course, goes to the one, the only Cobra Kai dojo to put a challenge out to, of course, John Kreese and his kids. And John Kreese accepts and says, we won't touch Daniel until the tournament. So it gives him time to train Daniel in the ways of course, of Miyagi. Miyagi-Do, Gojuru Karate. And, of course, he does, which is fantastic. One of the great things about some of these characters in here, as we head to, is, of course, the tournament's the next part, is we get to see between the two of them a trust and bond. It's a father-son-like relationship, very much a sensei and student, but it's stronger than that. He's a real parental figure to, of course, Daniel, who's lost his father too, which is a cornerstone of their relationship. But, of course, he then has that great thing where he starts to teach him through house chores, waxing the car, of course, waxing, shaving down the deck of the backyard of Miyagi's house, painting the fence, all that sort of stuff. And, of course, the realization that that is actually a karate that he's learning. On the other flip side of that, we see how Kreese handles things in his dojo, which is, of course, a very rough house. Tang Soo Do is what they're learning there too, which is a Korean form of martial art and very similar to karate. Uses some of their forms and some of the different ideas of karate in it as well. Again, different style, but of course, as you've seen Cobra Kai, that comes right through the fifth season. As we see, Terry Silver is, of course, exponent from Kim Sung-young from, of course, Korea. And, of course, the school of Tang Soo Do. Another martial art, of course, that the famous Carlos Norris, Chuck Norris, did as well, which is interesting. So, of course, they're going for the under-18s All-Valley Karate Championship. And we have that great one where basically he knocks off every single member of the Cobra Kai, everything except for, of course, John Kreese. But he gets his match met, of course, in the next film at the start. All right, let's have a look at some of the cast here, folks. We have Ralph Macchio playing Daniel LaRusso, who's probably only really famous originally for The Outsiders, I guess. This is very close to that time. Pat Morita, obviously, we've talked about, comedian before this, and, of course, working for some great stuff like Happy Days and stuff. William Zabka as Johnny Lawrence. Now, you know him better these days, of course. He's known for playing bully characters. It's just something that he played back in the day. But I think you've really seen now in particular a sense of, you know, just where things are going when it comes to all this sort of stuff, you know, particularly with Cobra Kai. We've shown that, you know, these actors have got a lot more potential and wide range of, you know, skill. And now I'm just seeing it on TV as well. All right, we have Elizabeth Shue as Ellie Mills. And, of course, you know, she went on to a massive career after this. Of course, known for Back to the Future Part 2. And many other films as well. Elizabeth Shue, fantastic in this as well. Great character. And, of course, she came back in one of the seasons of Cobra Kai. Martin Cove. What can be said about Martin Cove? First of all, it's hands down one of the only in the cast, apart from maybe one other, that is actually a real martial artist. Studying, of course, Okinawa Te. Te meaning hand. So Okinawan hand or fist, if you like. Great actor. He's, you know, obviously somebody I think personally that should have been in a massive amount of westerns now. He's done westerns, but I reckon he should be reigniting the fuel of westerns now. He really has that classic look of a western hero, you know, when it comes to cowboys and stuff like that too. John Kreese, he's going to be known for forever. Obviously, he's in Rambo 2, number of other films. And you know, we've actually going to be covering quite a few of his other films here. Steel Justice being one of them, of course. VHS that I'd never seen on DVD anywhere, and it's pretty much his version of Rambo. It's fantastic. But as of course John Kreese, it's a great conflicted character who means well to his own people, but he only knows one way. And a Vietnam veteran as well, which again is, you know, an interesting part of the character and how he deals with, of course, PTSD. And more in this too. Right, we got Randy Heller as Lucille LaRusso, and again, she gets some great work in this. Not just her work with the car, but also her work with everything, you know, interaction with everyone and positivity. She's fantastic in this. Chad McQueen as Dutch, who's never been back for any of the sequels or TV shows yet. Let's hopefully he does. I think he's quit acting. But, of course, he's the son of Steve McQueen, and he is a martial artist as well. Probably not quite on the same caliber as, of course, Martin and some of the others, but his father used to train with, of course, Bruce Lee. So that's probably a big one there too. Ron Thomas as Bobby Brown, of course, Sensei Ron Thomas, known for, of course, his work in jiu-jitsu and judo. I believe it's mainly jiu-jitsu, but he was an actual full belt martial artist. I don't know if he's a black belt at the time, but he was definitely a jiu-jitsu champion at that time. So well done to him as well. Tony O'Dell is Jimmy and Rob Garrison as Tommy as well. Great cast, folks. And a lot of them have come back in the seasons too. But I mean, again, Sensei Ron Thomas in particular has always been an advocate for martial arts when it comes to just how good they are for people and stuff. He's very positive with his jiu-jitsu. I mean, that's something that, you know, wasn't as popular in the 80s. And it's interesting how that's come back now. So it's really interesting too. So what's interesting about The Karate Kid, a lot of it has to do with the screenwriter Robert Mark Kamen himself, who basically had an incident at the 1964 New York World's Fair, and where he's basically beaten up by a bunch of hooligans. And, you know, part of that sort of idea of, you know, going and learning something to, you know, protect yourself against that sort of you know, crime and stuff like that was just something they were going to do. And, of course, one of the things he didn't like his first teacher in martial arts, so instead moved on to study, of course, classical Goju-Ryu Okinawan style, and under a Japanese teacher who really wanted to get down that really strict style. And, of course, you know, it's classical karate as well, so it's interesting too. With this cast, many people were tried out, of course, for the roles of the main characters. For Daniel, characters, you know, such a strong character now in our minds from Ralph Macchio. But here's just a list of some of the actors that were tried out for it too. Sean Penn, Robert Downey Jr., Charlie Sheen, John Cryer, Emilio Estevez, Nicolas Cage. I could kind of see that. Nicolas Cage is Ralph Macchio's delivery. Not the same, but it'll be different. Anthony Edwards, C. Thomas Howell, Tom Cruise, Eric Stoltz, and D.B. Sweeney. A lot of that cast from, of course, The Outsiders as well, too, which is really, really interesting. So you can kind of see that, too. They're all probably going for roles at the same time, too. Toshiro Mifune was one of the was wanted for Miyagi, and you can kind of see why. It's a very serious role, and Mifune is known for his very gruff and tough delivery, obviously, in samurai roles and many others. Obviously, he's done Rashomon, some samurai, the Samurai Trilogy. We've talked about that here, folks, and how damn good that is. We'll go into that more. Musashi Trilogy is one of the best film trilogies, not just, you know, it was made so long ago in the 50s in color, and it looks fantastic still to this day. It is on another level, folks. It really is, too. Crispin Glover was up for the role of Johnny Lawrence. Can you imagine that? Okay. He does martial arts, which freaked me out enough. He dropped out of kick, I think, sometime on the Letterman show years ago. And even Dave Letterman was like, "The hell?" which is fantastic. Obviously, too, the fact that, you know, you've got William Zabka, who was a wrestling champ in high school, I believe. So you've got all that, too. So it's great. We've got Ron Thomas, who's a jiu-jitsu champ. And then we've got somebody that's classical wrestling. The wrestling they do in high schools and stuff like that too. So it's fantastic too. But of course, I mean, what more would you want? This is a great cast, you know, and it's great that the cast has always come back in this series too, right through to the sequels as well. So the filming began on October 31, 1983, and wrapped in December of that year as well. The fight choreographer in the movie was Paddy Johnson, who is a Tang Soo Do black belt. So that's why Cobra Kai has Tang Soo Do those elements too. You'll see Pat in, of course, a scene in End of the Dragon where he's basically at a golf course trying to get one of the characters to give them money or whatever it was in the scenes. Again, he knew Bruce pretty well and featured in that film too. With, of course, Fumio Demura's help as the stunt double for Miyagi as well, and help with choreography as well, which is great. And, of course, Fumio Demura also taught Bruce Lee the nunchuku. So there you go. Sort of comes back around there, doesn't it? Circles of martial arts back in the day was just fantastic. Now, the first film is such a, you know, a classic. You know, it's hard to think of just, you know, what else the film did well apart from that. But it's the music too. We remember, you know, some great stuff from the 84 soundtrack. So I'll read out some of the titles. We've got The Moment of Truth by Survivor, On the Beach by The Flirts, Jan and Dean, No Shelter by Broken Edge, Tough Love, Desire, and, of course, Joe Esposito's You're the Best. I mean, that is one of the ultimate classic ones to put on in the gym when you're going there too, folks. Now, like Rocky, this film got sequels, and it got some great characters in those sequels. And if anything, like The Dark Knight did to Batman Begins, I believe Karate Kid 2 only bettered the series. You know, we've got Miyagi's backstory. We've got Miyagi's love of life. We've got Kumiko coming into the universe. And, of course, Chosen Taguchi. And, of course, Sato. You know, Sato is such an interesting character. He's spoken about off-screen, and straight away, everyone's like, whoa, who's this guy? You know, like you're trying to find out more as you go. And it just literally, it feels like the same film back-to-back, and it's done so well. And I think one of the great parts of that is learning about Okinawa, even though the sequel was shot in Hawaii, in Oahu. Right? But, I mean, the Tommy Village that they go to is a beautiful set, beautifully done. It's just got some great scenes in it, too, and a great showdown at the end with Chosen when he comes down, looking kind of like Scorpion in his outfit, folks. He's got that Scorpion gi, you know, black and yellow gi. Looks great. But Chosen, and then, of course, you know, Yuji Okamoto, fantastic. He's really having a great tour de force now with, of course, season 5. He's definitely the best character, hands down, in that, you know. And it's what I love about it. You know, we're really getting a sense of, you know, where these characters are going. And, hey, look, you know, Chosen back. And he's definitely coming back in season 6. That's a given. But, of course, Danny Kamikona, who did the role, of course, of Sato, is just on another level in this too. And, of course, Yuji and Danny have worked in a number of different projects as well with some of the cast. Danny and, of course, Pat used to work together in another series years before. And, of course, Danny and Yuji did a couple of sci-fi films. There's one that was a little bit like Robot Jocks that they did, which I really enjoyed too, which I'll have to talk about at one time too, because I know you've got a lot of mecha fans out there that love all that robot fighting and stuff. We are going to cover Robot Jocks soon here. Without a doubt, that's going to happen, folks. So stay tuned for that. That's happening. But the second film to me is just as good as the first. Now, bleeding into, of course, the third film. You know, the third film is, to me, yes, like The Dark Knight Rises. May not be on the same level as the first two, but it's a perfectly good closer for this part of the story. We have, of course, Terry Silver come in. And Terry Silver, to me, a little bit like an Emperor Palpatine-like character. He comes in and, you know, he's trying to save what was Cobra Kai. You know, he's around, of course, you know, back in the day, at the early times, for the creation of Cobra Kai, but, of course, then left and did what he had to do. And, of course, Kreese built those dojos up, or at least the dojo that they had. Expansion is Terry Silver's idea, of course, because he likes to franchise the hell out of everything. Kind of sounds like the franchises of today, where they're trying to really pump that out there. And it's interesting, too. Obviously, he hires Mike Barnes, played by, of course, Sean Kanan. Big hello to Sean too. We really want to see him out here at some of the Australian, of course, pop culture festivals. Supernova would no doubt take you, Sean, if you're listening tonight. And, of course, your Cobra book is fantastic read. And, folks, hopefully, if Sean's listening, welcome you on for an interview anytime you like too. We would love to talk about, of course, the positivity that that book brings as well too. It's fantastic. So, with that too, we've got Mike Barnes, who's kind of like a mercenary-like character. You know, he's hired, he's a karate champion, but he has to work for Cobra Kai and, of course, Terry Silver to undermine, of course, Daniel LaRusso, who doesn't want to take part in the next All Valley Championships. He doesn't want a bar of it. But of course, he's forced to, even though his own sensei is, you know, like, yeah, you don't need to. You're defending your honor beforehand, but defending a piece of plastic, which is the trophy, was the big cause of saying, no, you don't need that, which is great. It's a great way of bringing back also to Kreese, who is believed to be dead at the start, and then the shock of halfway through it when he surprises Daniel is great. I mean, it really is a great threequel, if you like. And this, and the, as a third film, it's a nice wrap up. And the, you know, each film had a specific karate theme. The first one was using white crane techniques, of course, the crane kick or whatever it is. And of course, a lot of karate styles go back to China to white crane kung fu. Jesse Ankamp, the karate nerd, has talked about this on his channel a number of times, and even been to China and seen some of those classic Goju-Ryu and other katas through white crane and other styles in China, where they originated. You can see the links that go through to the Okinawan styles that we know so well today, right? But going back to, of course, seeing in the series, we get to see white crane in that one. The second one, we get to see kind of a hammer technique that they use as his kind of focus. And, of course, that's the secret Miyagi drum technique, which is great. It's a block and a punch, basically. And, of course, the third film looked at, of course, kata and classic katas that would, you know, really bring those about. And done well, too, folks. You know, it's an interesting take and another two. So, folks, it's a five-star series, and it's a five-star review of the HD versions. Well, I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you check out the podcast when it airs later this month. Here.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has many a thing to say about deep thought. And Deep Thought itself has many a thing to say about the guide, who are going to give you a guide through the maelstrom and enormity of the guide itself. Hosted by two unexpected travelers, the Lethal Mullet, all the way from Quinlan's Cantina in the Milky Way, and of course, Dan the Man from Birmingham. All on the other side of the water, they have hitched a ride and come to Ursa Minor. Tell you all about the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which you can find whenever you find good podcasts.
That's right, folks. Check out the brand new show, Deep Thought Life, Douglas Adams and Everything, monthly on, of course, the Lethal Mullet Network at lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on the socials at The Lethal Mullet. You can also check it out on YouTube very soon on the Spacebook Network, hosted by the one and the only co-host here, Dan the Man from Birmingham, Dan Hadley. All here. And Don't panic, we'll be back.